The birth of a child is, without question, the most wonderful moment possible for any family. It's not a decision taken lightly, obviously. Most parents consult with medical experts, study and seek all the education that's available, and even when all of that is successfully done, not all the preparation is achieved, and that's when a demon such as sudden infant death syndrome attacks. Well, research has greatly reduced the rate of SIDS, especially here in New Jersey. It still takes place, but can continue to be prevented when the required knowledge is gained. My first guest today is part of an organization which has been at the forefront in the battle against SIDS in New Jersey. She is the program director of the SIDS Center of New Jersey, also professor with the Department of Pediatrics at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical Center, Dr. Barbara Ostfeld. Thanks for being here today, Doctor.
Thank you for your interest in this topic, Chris. Much appreciated.
And learn more about the work of the SIDS Center of New Jersey. It's one of those elongated URLs, but we do have it linked over to our webpage for your edification, though. It's rwjms.rutgers.edu/SIDS. Define, Doctor, sudden infant death syndrome.
Sudden death. Seemingly healthy baby. Death remains unexplained even after it's been subject to a thorough evaluation that includes an autopsy, anatomic, metabolic, genetic, a thorough death scene investigation, and a review of the medical records. And if you'd like another name for it, you might want to call it, I don't know why my baby died syndrome, which is horrifying because if you've ever sat with a family who's lost a baby or a child, the first word out of their mouth is why. And the struggle for these families is that there is no specific answer. But we do know, and this is so important, what can be done to dramatically reduce the risk of these deaths.
And that knowledge does come with a power, because if you look at the trends of sudden infant death syndrome rates from 1990 to the most recent numbers we have in 2015, it went from 130.3 deaths per 100,000 live births down to 39.4 per 100,000. That is a major achievement, but that's, albeit a small number in comparison, still means there are deaths happening.
Exactly, and nobody's happy. You can have a moment of joy when you see a drop, but then it's never satisfying because babies are still dying. I should tell you that to translate those statistics into real baby numbers, we can appreciate the drop. In 1990 in the United States, every year we lost 5,400 babies to SIDS. And in 2015, the most recent year with finalized data, we've lost 1,500. In terms of the rates, there's been a 70% drop. But again, 1,500 babies, still too many babies. So we applaud the impact. If we were able to encourage parents in your audience, grandparents especially, clergy, I'll explain that in a minute, to increase the use of what we know are preventive and risk-reducing methods, we could see these rates drop even further. That's the important point that I want to bring home today. There are simple, effective steps. They work. Everyone who's listening can make a difference, and the power of one matters because each person in your audience can have a conversation with others, and they can communicate this beyond just the listening audience.
And we'll get into those two, but I want to bring this point up before I forget it. We've seen through medical science an increase in premature births out of necessity, or just out of they happen because they happen, and that's worthy of mentioning because as you discussed in a recent report that you released with your colleagues, while 0.51 deaths were reported for every 1,000 births between the ages of 39 to 42 weeks, if you go back to a 24 to 27-week period, that rate goes up to 2.68 for every 1,000 births. And as I said, with the increase in premature births because of a variety of reasons, that's a number worthy of concern and focus.
Chris, you're doing my job for me, and you're an excellent statistician, and you're absolutely right. The shorter the gestation of the baby, the higher the risk of SIDS. The message here is that every baby should be placed to sleep safely, and I'll describe that in a moment. And we especially want to make sure that our vulnerable premature babies are accorded the same opportunity.
Talking with Dr. Barbara Ostfeld, who is the program director of the SIDS Center of New Jersey. She's also a professor with the Department of Pediatrics at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. rwjms.rutgers.edu/SIDS is their website. We've linked over on our webpage, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Also wrote to Doctor, that New Jersey was the first state, this was back earlier this year, to offer, they're called baby boxes. Is that an educational tool, or is that a more of a preventative to decrease the risk of SIDS?
The program that sponsors it provides education, and we always welcome education. As far as the product is concerned, baby box, all we can say is that whoever wants to explore the use of that needs to do due diligence, and that means checking to see if it meets the standards of the Consumer Product Safety Commission as a safe sleep product, and also what the recommendation or opinion of the American Academy of Pediatrics would be. Regarding education is a very important point I hope to make before we run out of time.
Sure.
When Back to Sleep first began, and that's, let me explain that, that was in 1992. Before that Back to Sleep campaign began, the only thing that we knew about potentially reducing the risk of SIDS is that it would be better not to go through winter. What do you do with that information? So mostly when we began the SIDS Center in 1987, the focus was not research or risk reduction education. It was supporting families through grief, because families get through this, but they never get over it. And a lot of times the loss of a tiny baby is a sad and silent mourning, because families will not be afforded the respect that a short life deserves. A short life deserves the same respect as any life. The grief does not correlate to the length of a life. Your dreams and your hopes for that baby and for what that baby's life will mean go up in smoke. And that painful grief is enormous. And that's what we focused on. But in 1992, the American Academy recognized powerful research that was coming out that indicated that babies who were placed on their backs had a much lower rate of sudden infant death syndrome. At that time in the United States, only 10% of our babies were sleeping on the backs. Today, 80% are. So as our rates have gone down, you see the rate of back to sleep going up. That's an enormous change. Prior to that onset of the recommendation in the 1994 Back to Sleep campaign, a lot of parents were guided by Dr. Spock. I don't know if anybody in your audience is old enough to remember him, but he was the go-to guy who said, put your babies on their bellies or they'll choke, with no evidence to support that. But he influenced a lot of people. And the evidence that came out later tells us that now that we know better, we can do better. Back to sleep does not elevate the risk of choking. Any family with concern must discuss this with their pediatrician. There are very rare exceptions. And once that practice was used, we began to see the rates absolutely plunge. It made a dramatic difference. In fact, Back to Sleep has been called one of the 7 great achievements in pediatric research in the last 40 years. So we go around to all of the hospitals, the child care programs, you name the systems, where they're providing risk reduction education, which has now gone well beyond just Back to Sleep. It also includes don't clutter your crib. Bumpers are actually not recommended. They provide no benefit, and they can produce harm. And in Chicago and Maryland, they're actually banned now. Not so in New Jersey yet. No blankets, no pillows, just a good mattress. It shouldn't be the kind where that sags in the middle. That's dangerous. It should fit the full crib. The crib or the bassinet or the portable crib should meet current Consumer Product Safety Commission standards. And that crib should not only have the baby on the back and no clutter in it, but it should be by the parent's bed. Bed sharing is actually a risk elevator. Although in our hearts we want our babies nearest, the truth is when a baby falls asleep with a parent in a bed with a typical adult American bedding, that's a risk factor, and the majority of our babies who continue to die in those settings. So yes, parents can bring their baby into bed to cuddle, to nourish, to breastfeed, to play. But when a parent is ready to go to sleep, by the bed is safer than in the bed. You can still hear your baby, touch your baby, see your baby, but your baby is protected. Breastfeeding is actually beneficial as well. And one very, very important message, no smoking, please. Smoking increases the risk of SIDS dramatically. And in fact, sudden unexpected infant deaths of all kinds have a 6 times greater chance in families where there is smoke. We don't want our pregnant mamas to be smoking. We don't want them exposed to smoke. We don't want our babies exposed to smoke. So it's not just mama and papa. It's everyone in the household who really has to have that message. We have found in our published research that 96% of our SIDS cases had some risk present. The notion that there was absolutely no risk isn't true. And so what this tells us is there's something that we can do about it. Back to sleep, clutter-free crib, by the parent's bed, not in it, no smoking. Those things dramatically work. And if parents and grandparents and other caregivers apply it fully, we will see the rates drop even further. And I want to speak out to grandmas because I'm one of them. I have 7 grandbabies and a wonderful stage of life, let me tell you. All of us who raised babies before 1992 were told belly down. If you do the work I do, then you know that we know better now. But for a lot of grandparents, when their children come home with their new babies and place them on their backs, we find the grandparents will be horrified, and they say, what are you doing? Put your baby on the belly the way I raised you. I raised all of you like that, and you're fine. And we say, not fine, lucky. Mm-hmm. The truth of the matter is, in public health, you could do everything wrong. I mean, why are we all alive if we grew up without car seat belts? You just have a much better chance if you follow the evidence-based guidelines. And so we sit down with grandparents, and we have a respectful conversation because everyone wants the same outcome, which is a healthy baby. And we discuss the new information, and we explain that it's so different from what we did that it may seem weird, but it works. And by golly, at the end of that discussion, we find that the grandparents are on board, and they then support their children's efforts. We also encourage pediatricians to give additional information at every well baby visit. Sometimes we front load the information in the hospital and at the first visit, and parents are getting tons of information. And they are compliant and responsive in the beginning, but then that drops off. And so it's important at every well baby visit, and that's why the New Jersey chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics is such an important colleague of ours in these efforts. At every well baby visit, there should be a reminder of how important this message is. We hope every family responds and complies, and everyone in the audience, and I'll explain clergy in a moment, really recognizes the great work that they can do to make a difference. Clergy has a pulpit, and a pulpit is a wonderful source of education for families. You reach across the lifespan. Because we don't just want to target parents. Young adults matter. Even younger children who are going to grow up to parent need to know this information. Certainly grandparents matter. Child care providers, all of the folks who have hands on a baby matter. And a pulpit reaches out to all of those folks. So we reach out to clergy all the time. I taught a course about a year ago for the New Brunswick Theological Seminary, and the experience was incredible. There is such investment because clergy doesn't just want to sit and grieve with a family. They want to help a family prevent this from happening or at least reduce the risk of it happening. And so if there are any clergy members listening, we welcome your involvement, and we're happy to come out and provide education, discussion, materials. It would be our pleasure and our honor.
And what Dr. Ostfeld has described is really, just to summarize, if it looks like it has the potential to prevent or inhibit a natural respiratory function, that is something that you do not want to place your baby into. And simple steps really are a strong prevention, and this is one of those cases when it comes to sudden infant death syndrome. You can get more information and reach out to the SIDS Center of New Jersey at rwjms.rutgers.edu/SIDS. We've linked to their site over to our site, And we've been joined this morning by the program director of the SIDS Center of New Jersey. She's also a professor with the Department of Pediatrics at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical Center, Dr. Barbara Ostfeld. Thank you so much for the awareness that you raise, the difference that you're making, the discoveries that you're helping people realize the value of, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Chris. Much appreciated.